This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Sunday. Hope you all had a good 4th of July. Safe. Hope your pets were safe. You know, it's funny. In all the years of 4th of July, and I've had many, many, many dogs over the years, including five now, and my dogs have never had the problem with the noise, the sound. In fact, I leave them outside. They're fine. It's like never happened. So I guess in that regard, I'm pretty lucky. But I heard of something really cool. So you may have heard this. I didn't know because it's been new to me. Apparently, they have these kind of noise-reducing headsets or a phone, almost like an earphone that you could put over your dog. And I guess it must kind of, you know, kind of be soft wrap around the head with some noise-reducing product or fabric, something, right, that fits over their ears. And so one of my clients let me know that he tried it and it worked. He said it was great. So I never heard of it, but something to look into maybe in the next year or two. So I got a question is from Francesca. All right. Good morning. Question. Why do you suggest for a male dog that he gets fixed sooner or later? What are the risks of not having it fixed? Thank you. Okay. So great question. And when it comes to neutering and spaying anyway, I am an advocate. I think that it can avoid a lot of problems in the future. There is one breed, however, that new studies have shown that it might actually be better not to spay neuter. But the only breed that holds true is the Golden Retriever. Now, more work is being done. I know UC Davis is studying this and a couple other universities are studying it, that there seems to be a higher prevalence of tumors in general in these dogs, in the Golden Retriever, if they are spayed or neutered. So that's interesting. A couple of things have changed over the years. Number one, we do know that in males, and I'm going to give you a statistic, more from the behavior side, but there are some advantages as well, but more from the behavior side, and that is this, CB, that they've shown that if one were to make a couple of assumptions, and the assumptions being, say, half the dogs in America are male and half are female, just make it simple. And let's say half are spayed, neutered, half aren't. So then, probably more are spayed, neutered than not, but let's say half-half, just to prove my point. So then in any of the quadrants, okay, male, female, spayed or not spayed, neutered or not neutered, the percentage of males that are intact should be around 25%, okay? So, right, half male, half female, half spayed, half neutered, half not neutered. So you're looking at 25%. So then statistically, if you were to hear a statistic about the dogs that are found dead on U.S. roads and highways, one would think that just by the numbers, quarter of them males that are neutered, quarter of them males not neutered, a quarter female spayed, a quarter not spayed. Well, guess what it is? 75% of dogs found dead on U.S. roads and highways are non-neutered males. What does it tell you? It tells you that these dogs, as you know, behaviorally, they like to roam. And they're the ones that are jumping fences and getting out, and they're picking up the scents of females that are in season and estrus, and this is what's going on. So right there, from a safety standpoint, it's probably better to get them spayed or neutered. Now, how about medically? If you neuter a dog young, then you can eliminate prostatitis. Well, pretty much any time prostate. Now, there was a study done about prostate cancer, and it seems to be there's no benefit or detriment either way. So I'm not going to tell you do it. It's going to prevent prostate cancer. Fortunately, prostate cancer is not that very common, but prostatitis, inflamed prostate, which is very painful for the dog. You'll see bloody urine. This is something that seems to be how much higher prevalence in intact males. When you neuter, in fact, if you get a dog that persistently gets prostatitis, first of all, you know he's probably intact. Secondly, when we get him through this bout, we want to neuter him. Ideally, you don't want to neuter a dog in the middle of a prostatitis, because that can lead to what's called prostatic cysts. We want to wait till everything goes down, everything is normal, and then we want to get them fixed. Now, so there are some of your advantages. Now, of course, testicular cancer, again, it's not super prevalent, but if you remove the testicles, there's no way they can get testicular cancer. So, and here's another one. This is important too, that when it comes to testicular cancer, if your dog is what's called a monorchid or cryptorchid, meaning the testicles have not descended. They are somewhere in the abdomen or in the flank. Flank testicles, not as bad. But abdominal testicles, they are a much greater, higher risk of developing cancer. Why? Testicles in the scrotum are basically subjected to ambient temperature, whatever it is, 70, 80, whatever. But a dog's body temperature is 100.5 to 102.5. That means the testicle that is in the abdomen is subjected to that temperature, and that temperature predisposes them to more prostatic disease, including prostatic cancer. I mean, excuse me, testicular disease, and that means testicular cancer. So it's something you really, really want to know, that if you have a dog that is a house dog and you're not going to show him and you're not going to breed him, then in my opinion, it's better, safer, long haul to get him neutered. You don't want to wait until there's a problem and then do it if you can do it prophylactically. So, and it might save their lives, because if you have a dog that's going to roam and gets hit by a car, or, you know, in a fight with a coyote or something like that, it could be a real problem. So I hope that answers your question. And so I'm dealing with a case now, and female, I may as well, since we're talking about this, a five-year-old Frenchie. Well, again, five-year-old Frenchie, I would definitely neuter. Now, one can argue both ways. Well, God, he's 5 years old already. Nothing's ever happened. What's going to happen? Well, I've had prostate infections, prostatitis, come in dogs that are 10 or 11. And at that point, you really want to get them through the bout, and then you want to fix them. Well, would I rather anesthetize a five-year-old dog or an 11-year-old dog? So unless you have this dog, and I'll give you another statistic, most legitimate breeders, I mean, we're talking breeding responsible, they know their crafts. Once their dogs hit 6 or 7, they're going to fix them anyway, because they're too old to breed. No one's going to want to breed with a 7 or 8 year old dog. Females, they're not going to do well anyway. So that's why. So when you know a legitimate breeder wants to get their pets fixed and they're making lots of boku bucks doing the breeding, those studs go out for, who knows, a Frenchie stud, but that would probably get, I wouldn't surprise you, they get $3,000 to $5,000 a breeding. So why not? But when they hit that certain age, they usually get them fixed. So females, before we go into the Boaz, we'll talk about that in a second. Before we get there, I want to talk about the females. Again, there are more advantages to spaying a dog early. Unlike the male, medically, it can be done almost any time. Females, the incidence of breast cancer, mammary cancer, in a female dog jumps up dramatically when they are intact. If you spay them before the first heat, then it's almost 98%, 95% reduction, risk reduction. If you let them have one and spay before the second, it's about 88 to 90%, still pretty darn good. But after that, there's no risk reduction. So you want to get them at least before their second heat. Now, what about other issues? Why not do them all before the first heat? In very small breeds, then that is still acceptable. But there are a number of studies out now that are realizing, they're showing that there are more problems in dogs that were spayed too early later on in life. And therefore, they recommend letting them have one heat. And so I'm in that camp right now. Larger breeds, you can wait. Let them have one heat, but spay them before the second. Small breeds, you could still, I just wait till all their adult teeth are in, because you don't want to knock them out twice unless there's severe crowding early on, and it's going to affect how the teeth come in if you wait too long. Some of those dogs rarely need to have two procedures. One, as soon as the puppy tooth, the deciduous tooth, does not fall out, and you can see the adult tooth is coming in an abnormal position, you want to go ahead and get the puppy teeth out. Most of the time, you can wait till like 6 months, all the adult teeth should be in, and any teeth that are still in, baby teeth that are still in by 6 months, need to come out anyway. So do them at that time. Males on neutering, for example, though, larger the breed, the longer I want to wait. they take longer to mature. They age faster, but longer to mature. So if I have a giant breed, I'll try to keep until a year and a half, even two. A large breed to one and a half. Medium breeds, at least 12 months. But the little guys, if you want to do it earlier, you can do it earlier. Okay, waving. Behavior, do I see a change in behavior after the operation? I usually don't see a change at all. And people say, yeah, but he's such a good watchdog. Let me tell you something. If you talk to military or police departments that use a lot of these dogs, the females are just as bad, just as aggressive, just as trainable. So you can't use that argument. It's not going to work. Either male or female are going to be the same. So the hope is they become a little more homebody. They become a little less aggressive with other dogs, like walking them out in the neighborhood. If there's another male dog, they should chill. Now, have I seen that my little Frenchie or my one of my little terriers? No, still as obnoxious as they come, but they are neutered. But sometimes it's just the nature of the dog, whether male, female, intact, spayed, it doesn't make a difference. So anyway, I do think they mellow. They become a little bit more. Better family oriented, in my opinion. Okay, hippos. How do you know if your dog has BOAS? So BOAS is brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome. Brachycephalics are the dogs with the pushed-in faces, the Bostons, the Frenchies, the Pugs, the English Bulldogs, the Shih Tzus, the Lhasa, all those, the Japanese Chin, all those dogs with really pushed-in faces are subject. The French Bulldogs are notorious. They are probably the number one breed to suffer from this syndrome. How do you know? First of all, they're breathing. Their breathing is not like it's when they get excited, they really struggle. They get overheated, they really struggle. Their noses are also really pinched. If you look at their nostrils and compare it to a normal dog, they're really pinched like this. So they can't even, you know, do air exchange through their nose either. So their throat, what happens is they have what they call laryngeal saccules are enlarged. They have elongated soft palate. They have stenotic nares. Okay, this all and just the whole back of the throat is just very thickened. Some of these things are anatomic, and they also get often hiatal hernias. So there are so many problems associated with these dogs. So I do the surgery, the nares, the saccules, the soft palate. I use laser. I think it's fantastic. A lot of doctors just still do good old-fashioned surgery. You get bleeding. It all stops. They know they cut the nose. I do laser. So laser, I have to do, rarely use a suture for laser. I would say 98% don't bleed at all. 2% a little bleeding. I can either use a little epinephrine or I'll just put one or two sutures in, but it's very, very unusual. So I think laser is the way to go. But some people use electrocautery. But in general, it is a very common problem in these breeds. You can tell because they just can't breathe. And when they can't breathe or their breathing is labored and noisy, you know that's the problem. So, and you can just have it checked out. Now, one of the things I will tell you, for those of you who have these breeds and you hear the breathing issues, you can take into your vet who's going to open the mouth and say, oh, here's the problem. They have to be evaluated under anesthesia. So what I typically do, since again, so many of these dogs are going to get spayed or neutered, I tell the owner, I can tell you the nares. That's the only thing you can see. You cannot evaluate saccules nor elongated soft palate in an awake dog. So I wait till we anesthetize. And when I pass that endotracheal tube is when I make my judgment call. And then I'll talk to the owner and say, okay, you're good or you're not good. And we take it from there. Okay. So another thing, nuts, we love our Frenchie. I know Frenchies are, I have Frenchies. I'm on my third and they're a unique breed. I can tell you that. And they're getting really, really popular there. They are. I mean, obviously, the number one dog in the AK, registered dog in the AKC right now. They have overtaken the Labrador Retriever, which is pretty amazing. So, and I've had labs for even longer than I've had Frenchies. In fact, I have one right now. Let's see. I want to make sure I've waved at everybody. All right. What I want to do now, because it's our halfway point in the show, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about one thing specifically, and that is the emergencies. I want to talk about just some of the emergency issues that we've seen. How many are not? What you can do before spending hours upon hours, especially in a big city. My clients tell me they've gone to an emergency clinic, and besides the fact that 95% of them were not emergencies, they waited for hours. And then what happens once you're in that clinic disturbs me greatly. So I just want to give you guys some pointers, things to think about. And when we come back, we will. And if any other questions, think of them now. You can send them to me during the break, and we'll go from there.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back live here on Pet Life Radio as well. And we're just talking about ears, ear infections, ear disease. And there are a number of reasons. First of all, allergy. Atopy, inhaled allergies. How one would know whether it's environmental allergies like pollens, weeds, and trees, and what we call atopy, inhaled allergens, that is going to be a seasonal. And if it's not seasonal, and it's been all the time, there is a possibility, especially if it's linked to also dogs that are rubbing their faces, okay, or they are some ears, faces, and feet. They're licking a lot at their front feet, so much so that they're causing what's called a discoloration, saliva staining of the hair at the top of the feet or underneath the paws. It's all red. They're really attacking themselves. Those three things combined, I would say food allergy is high on my list. And so for that, we talked about this before, starting what's called a single antigen novel protein diet. Both of those are very important. You can't have a food, if you read the ingredients, that have three or four different grains or vegetables that have two different protein. You can't do that. The more you put in, the more likely one of those is going to be allergenic to the dog. And then you're going to blow the whole food because you think the whole food is bad. It's not. It was that one protein. So we look for things that are single protein, so and novel. Novel meaning new to the dog. What are some of the least novel? Beef, poultry, chicken, turkey. Why? Because they've been in the foods forever. Even lamb is getting close to that. So novel is going to be something that the dog has probably never had. And things like tilapia, cod, salmon, rabbit, venison, bison, alligator, kangaroo. I mean, there are proteins out there that are really crazy. And so, but that's what you want to put your dog on slowly. And as far as grains or a vegetable, one thing, it could be sweet potato, it could be potato, it could be green pea, it could be quinoa, it could be barley, it could be oats. And there are foods out there, or make it yourself. And then once you switch over slowly to this new single antigen, novel protein diet, then you're going to take, could say 6 to 8 weeks to start seeing a change. So, but it is really tough. Most people fail these elimination diets. Why? Because it's really hard and they always cheat, or they give them something that they don't realize, like a treat. That means if you're going to pick salmon, for example, every protein they eat's got to be salmon. It can't be anything else. Because then you're just kidding yourselves, because you've gone through all this work, and then you give them a treat that has some chicken in it. They start going after themselves and go, oh, well, I was hoping salmon would work, but it didn't work. Oh, the salmon was working great. It was the fact that you gave some chicken that didn't work. So be very, very, very strict with yourselves. Speak to your veterinarian. There are ways to do it. And you can also, there's some other diets out there, so you don't have to make anything or pick your brains out, that is hydrolyzed protein, okay? And so hydrolyzed protein is also, it's not as good as single antigen novel, but it's yeah, and that is they break the proteins down, the amino acids, so they no longer are seen by the body, by the immune system, as the culprit, as allergenic. It's just pieces. And therefore, these the amino acids are broken down before they get into the system, and therefore they're not as allergenic. So that is something to know. There was a question here. Cobham, does the hickey brace? Ear mites. So ear mites, I like the ivermectins. Ivermectins work really well for ear mites. Some of the selamectin, for example, selamectin, which is the active ingredient of Revolution, okay, or Celerid product, those are meant to be, they're sort of newer than Advantage, or I shouldn't say that, imidacloprid and fipronil, but they are still work well with cats and not as well with dogs. That's why I like the new isoxazolines for dogs, but they are good for ear mites. So any ivermectin product, either topically, we make our own using liquid ivermectin, and we put it topically and put them on a systemic treatment, the Celerid, and that seems to work well with ear mites. And also, you got to make sure to clean the ears out, or your veterinarian or your veterinary technicians, to clean the ears out really, really well. There's also a product called Mitox. Mitox, I don't think it's OTC, but you can get it, online. And your veterinarian may even have it. And I would put some Mitox in, also very, very effective. So, and fortunately, most adult dogs or cats don't get ear mites unless they're outdoor cats and they're mingling with kittens or dogs that are mingling with going to a daycare where there are a lot of puppies. But most of the time, the ear infection that dogs get is often what we call Malassezia. It's yeast. There are also some bacterial infections. Pseudomonas is a biggie, very hard. So sometimes when you have persistent ear infections, it's important to do a culture. Try to find out what it is. Do a cytology. See if your yeast, because if you have really bad yeast, most of the ear preps that we recommend have antifungal, anti-yeast medications in them. But if it's really bad and recurrent, a couple of things happen. Number one, when there's a lot of swelling as well, the ear is red and inflamed, those topicals don't work as well because they can't get to the source. The ear is too thickened. So that's a problem. So I often recommend an oral product as well, fluconazole, ketoconazole, itraconazole. You have to talk to your veterinarian. There are a lot of good products out there that seem to be able to kill the Malassezia, the yeast on the inside. And also, if it comes back bacterial, you want to put them on antibiotic as well. This is where also, if it's allergy related and you're using an isoxazoline, we don't usually want to use steroids. But I went to a talk a couple of years ago at one of my favorite conferences, which is the SCICE conference put on by the Colorado Veterinary Medical Association. SCICE standing for Ski CE, and it's always at a Colorado venue. I had to miss last year because it sat right the same time as VMX. I was so upset, but I'm looking forward to going this year. Always the last week of January, and it's always a great Colorado venue. And it's one of the things, 6:30 to 7 is a little breakfast, light breakfast. 7 to 9, you're in session. 9 to 4, you're on the slopes. And then 4 to 6 or 4 to 7 back in session, and then you're free for the evening. It's fantastic, loose, casual. Everybody has so much fun. So, but the speaker was all about allergy and ears, and he was a professor, DVM, PhD, internal medicine and dermatology. I mean, this guy was the real deal. And he says that even though the word's out there that if you're going to putting your dog a dog on that isoxazolines, you no longer need the steroids. Except, he says, if you have really inflamed ears, that you have, in order for anything to work, including the isoxazoline, you got to get rid of the swelling. And therefore, he does recommend using a short course of steroids to get rid of, that's prednisone, to get rid of the inflammation so everything else can start working. So I do double up. And I can, don't blame me. I can blame it on the professor because he knows way better than I do. And yes, it does work really well. Okay, so ear mites, let's see. Does the hickey brace really work from torn ligaments? Well, any brace, I'm not familiar with that brand, but any brace, depending on, first of all, the ligaments could be the knee, it could be, I'm dealing right now, it's a toe. So I'm putting it in a splint. So anything that's going to prevent the movement, and ideally, if you can, the pressure, especially when it's a toe, then it's going to help. I know that when I had my shoulder surgery, I could not work. I mean, there's no way I could. They wanted me to take off for 2 weeks and not, what are you, crazy? I took off. I did a day. I was back to work 2 days later, surgery Tuesday, home Wednesday, back at work Thursday. And I had surgery. So I did one of those braces that wrapped around my body. So I could not move. My arm was stuck to my body. And but my elbow, that wasn't broken. That worked fine. So I had my surgery table elevated up to my elbow and I was doing surgery. People thought I was nuts. My doctor hated me. But good news is I healed really well. So a hock brace, yes. So any of those braces, and they're good braces now that are, you can remove, they're Velcroed. Anything that prevents movement of that joint, that's key. If you can somehow prevent some of the pressure, which is very difficult in a dog, even though they're not using the joint, they're stepping on it. Okay, when I had my arm attached to my body with that brace going around me, I couldn't move I couldn't move my shoulder at all. And there's nothing that puts pressure. It's not like I'm lifting weights and doing, shoulder presses. So that was good. In dogs, I know it's really difficult, but that would be ideally is to, but definitely anything that stops the movement is going to be helpful when it comes to ligament damage. So Francesca, think of adopting a Frenchie out of shelter, but had growth in his ears. So really depends. First of all, chronic inflammation often leads to some sort of growth in the ear. Oftentimes, if it's fairly accessible through a scope, then they can be removed. I use my electrocautery for these, sometimes laser, and that opens up the ear canal. When you have a very, very narrowed ear canal, because of a growth taking up that space, the diameter, within the diameter of the ear canal, they're just more predisposed to infection. You don't get airflow. You get the dirt stuck in there. You get moisture stuck in there. It's a perfect environment for infection, especially yeast infection. So if you can access it, that's great. Now, if it's really down deep, then that's a different story, because then you might have to do almost like a procedure where you cut all the way down, you open up the canal, you remove it. But when you sew it back together, there could be scarring, and then that scarring can lead to narrowing. And then so sometimes if it's really bad, you end up needing what's called a lateral canal resection. You just remove the lateral canal. That's something your GP should be able to do. I do them. Or if you need what's called a TICA, which is a total ear canal ablation, and that would, I don't do those. I reserve those because you got to go way into the ear canal, into the bolus and the bulla. That requires some really fancy footwork and skill and training. And I never learned that procedure. So I don't do it. I refer that to the board certified surgeons. Okay. More joining. Good, good, good. Life with corgis. What are your thoughts and recommendations on rootin supplements on senior dogs for arthritis and other aging concerns? I'm not familiar with rootin, R-U-T-I-N. I know for arthritis, I would certainly recommend anything glucosamine, chondroitin, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. There is a Librela, which is a pain medication. That I would do. But first of all, on these dogs, because there are, fortunately from a prior question, there are ligament issues, it's more soft tissue strains, tendons. I would always want to confirm from an x-ray that there is ongoing arthritis. Arthritis is usually a radiographic interpretation. Now, sometimes you may need to get a CT or even an MRI, because sometimes you can have subtle arthritis that is not visible on an x-ray. I would think that if that's the case and the pain is there, I would, again, it depends how you want to approach it. Academically, you got to go on and keep looking. Practically, which is, I pride myself on being a practical vet, I would say, since these things, glucosamine, harmless. If the dog is healthy, already done bloods, and a good non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, like a carprofen, Duroxicib, all those other, Derecoxib, these are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that seem to work really well. Meloxicam, which is Medicam, a short course in a healthy dog with normal bloods, normal liver, I would try that. Galliprant. So basically, sometimes we rule out or we make a diagnosis based on response to therapy. And it's sometimes a lot cheaper as long as that therapy is not going to be harmful. And so from a practical standpoint, that's what I'd recommend. If you think that the pain is an issue, you could try Librela. Do your homework on Librela. There's a lot out there. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad stuff. I don't buy it. I've used hundreds of doses. I had one case, one, and 1% is not bad when it comes to reactions. And it wasn't even a serious, like they talk death and all that. The classic, you know, one that I heard from an independent research company that was studying this, that the dog who is claimed that the Librela caused this dog to die 2 days later, when they sent for an independent pathology lab for an autopsy, okay, called a postmortem exam, they found the dog had a splenic tumor, which was obvious there for a long time, that ruptured and this dog bled out. Had nothing to do with the Librela. But people love to point fingers. So a lot of these stories you hear, and guess what? Here's another one for you. Librela, it's for arthritis pain. How many young, healthy dogs are going to need to take Librela? Not many, if any. But who needs it? It's going to be that older dog that's slowing down, that could have another dozen different problems going on. You put them on Librela, and 3 weeks later, after the second, they die. Really? Was it the Librela? I don't think so. Before it came here, our FDA is as strict as hell. And it was used millions of doses in Europe for 5 years or whatever it was before it actually was approved here in the U.S., and their reaction rate was less than 1%. So any drug, I mean, I've told you this. My dad once had, after taking for years penicillin, had an anaphylactic reaction to penicillin and was rushed to a hospital, couldn't breathe. All right? Whose fault is that? Or how about that guy that goes to a restaurant and has an anaphylactic reaction to shrimp with no prior history? Okay? And is that the restaurant's fault? So it just really blows my mind when these people complain. I would use it. I would use it on my own dog. And could they get a reaction? Yes. The severe reactions of death, very rare. So if it was really going to relieve the suffering, and I've tried other things first and they didn't work well or well enough for me, or more importantly for my dog, I would use Librela. So, but talk to your veterinarian, do your homework. Look, it's easy. Don't look at like legitimate sources. Okay. Don't look at people, lay people. Don't even look at holistic homeopathic vets that don't like anything Western. Look at legitimate studies, scientific studies, peer-reviewed articles from the universities, and come up with your decision based on that. And then let me know. Got a collaboration with Lynette, who's fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay. Well, it's a good supplement for senior dogs. So for senior dogs, a couple of things. First of all, a joint supplement, especially if it's a big breed. Anything with glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, I think those are all good. One thing that I've been using, and I use it for my dog, my almost soon to be next month 14-year-old Labrador. He's doing great. He's on chondroitin. He's on that stuff. But I also have him on Leap Years. And Leap Years is an NAD plus. I take it myself. And let me rephrase. I don't take Leap Years. That's a dog product. But I take an NAD supplement. And the reason why I take it, honestly, I was approached by Leap Years to maybe help endorse their product. And I, you know, like as an influencer, whatever it means, I don't believe myself as one, but anyway, they thought I was. So I'm not going to lend my name and promote something I don't understand myself. So I started doing some homework on this whole process of NAD plus and the brain and the aging and all that stuff and the focus and memory. God, do I need that? And I was so impressed with the science that I started looking for human versions, and I take NAD every day. And so I do like Leap Years. It's a chew. I've yet to meet a dog that doesn't like it. And it seems to be working really well. My dog, I'm telling you, he's a almost 14-year-old Labrador. And except for my last lab, Grover, who went to 16 and a half, the oldest dog I ever got, Labrador, was 13 and a half, and that was Woody. So I'm telling you, I am already very, very impressed with it. So look it up, see if it works for you. Okay, I take a Reus. It's R-E-U-S. I took True Niagen, also very good. The Reus product that I take, you look it up, Reus Pharmacology, something like that. You see it. It's made in America. And I just liked it because it was more cost-effective, and it had one extra ingredient that I liked, and it is... And it was more of the NAD, the ribosomamide, whatever the hell they call it. It actually had more of it. So that's what I did. All right. Here is McWar Original Art. You're asking for a request to join. A lot of times people hit that and they don't mean to hit it. So if you really, really, really think that that's what you want, then just give me a thumbs up and I'll let you in. Anyway, we're once again, I am. Oh, what about collagen? Yeah, collagen. Also, there's some. I don't take it, but I've heard good things about it, and I don't use it for my dogs yet. But from what I read and understand, there's no downside. I just don't know anything about the brands. I have not done any research on it myself. So, but maybe I should, huh? Dude, I mean, I got a bad right knee, and I'm still playing basketball at 70. So, sometimes I take my fair share. I take CoQ10, which is, you know, I take my glucosamine chondroitin. Anything that I can do to get my free radicals under control, I'll do that. So I like myself, but I take a vitamin, a multi. So I'm going to look into it, because I hear a lot of people take collagen. Okay, so I've overstepped my welcome. All right. I know that Mark is giving me those dirty looks. So next week, I'm here, same bat time, same bat channel, here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Best with Dr. Jeff, and on Instagram Live. Save your questions if they're really good. But if it's something that's really serious or urgent, because we didn't get a chance to talk about one of the things I wanted to talk about, and that is what constitutes urgency? And how do I know whether I need to go rush to an emergency where I get to wait for 6 hours and spend $2,000? So we'll talk about that. I'll throw my two cents in there. And from my experience as chief veterinary advisor of AirVet, how many emergencies are really emergencies? So we'll talk about that next week. And again, thanks for joining me. Have a great week, everybody. I'm so glad you had a good fourth. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.